sabrosura pa ti que.
Hello everyone, this is Bum, the Café con Bum, the bilingual podcast that features Latine and people of the global majority who break barriers, change lives, and make this world a better place. Welcome to episode 334 of Café con Bum. Today, we have a conversation with Shanita Solray. Shanita is a National Board Certified Teacher, a special educator by nature and by trade. Teaching, speaking, and leading, Shanita serves the spiritual and personal development of youth, young adults, and their families. Shanita equips families with knowledge, tools, and techniques to access untapped potential and power for building greater personal fulfillment and quality of life. Shanita is an activist for social justice, an agent for social change, an advocate for an educational model that prioritizes self-study and personal learning plans. She's the founder of Light Bearers Institute, director at Horizons for Youth, author of ABCs for Mental Health, a handbook and how-to, and shining source for light in the world. She provides special education, mental health education, loving lessons to learn, to connect with a light body, raise your vibration, and exercise awareness, breath, and choice. Listeners, this conversation with Shanita was really fun because I felt seen as someone with a learning disability who did not uncover that until I was an adult. It was really refreshing to hear someone that has dedicated their life to advocate for this. And I will just let you listen to my conversation with Shanita, who was super fun to talk to. Y sin más, here's my conversation with Shanita Solray. Shanita, welcome to Café con Pam. I'm excited to have you.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
The first question that we always ask is, what is your heritage?
My heritage is African American. I am American, but I am definitely a descendant of African slaves brought to this country. And that's part of my heritage and my culture and my upbringing.
Thank you for sharing. And where did you grow up?
I grew up in Chicago on the South Side in a neighborhood called Inglewood. I grew up there.
Oh.
Yeah, in the 90s, 2000s. It was a whole experience. Let me tell you that.
So in LA, in California, there's an Inglewood as well.
Yes.
And that's where I lived for a minute. And so I understand. And it's also, you know, I mean, I think every neighborhoods have their good and bad things.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand. So born and raised in Chicago, always there.
Yeah, native. So what I loved about my neighborhood, since you mentioned it, what was great about it is there were families on my block that had been there for generations. So our parents knew each other and, you know, then the children were born and that was great. And that doesn't really resemble what Chicago looks like on a grand scale these days. But that is something that was great. But it was a high poverty area, and so it included a lot of the things that went along with that. There were a lot of restrictions because my mother wanted to keep us safe, of course. But with that, because, you know, I'm kind of limited to my block and my porch, but the generations, like the families there, people would just come hang out. So we were still able to, you know, explore adventure within our little area and within ourselves with each other. So that was really nice.
That's awesome. Did you ever leave for school or anything?
I did. when I graduated from high school, my intention was to leave Chicago and never return. That was kind of my attitude. My experiences in the city weren't the best. So I went the furthest I can go for the least amount of money, which at that time was Southern Illinois University, Carbondale, which was about 6 hours away from home, very far south in Illinois. From there, I graduated with my bachelor's in special education and decided to pursue a master's. And I still wanted to kind of get the education paid for. So I went to Central Illinois, to the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. And I lived there for about 5 years. But in my profession, in my career, I was being recruited. And there was an opportunity at a school here. They were, you know, reporting successes that I just found unbelievable. And I needed to see what they were doing. So I returned home in 2013. I've been here for 10 years and it's been a new experience and I love it. And as much as I explore, or I had a brief stint of living in Memphis, and definitely spending a lot of time traveling, thinking that I was going to find my next home. There is no place like Chicago. Yeah, no, I belong here. So I still love to travel, and I expect I'll live other places at some point, but this will always be home for me.
So I want to take us back a little bit. I watched your TED Talk. You were in school, and you were a good student.
Yes.
To the standards of the school system.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that moment when you and your brother had that situation and your mom gave you a lesson.
Yeah, I love to tell you about that. So I had to be maybe 6th or 7th grade. My brother is 4 years older than me, but it was report card season in our house and in our city. And report cards came and I had all A's, but I had a B. And I don't remember exactly what subject, probably math wasn't my strongest area. But my brother, Reve, had some C's, and the response was kind of like, you need to do better, and good job, sir. You know, essentially that was my interpretation. And I'm like, wait a minute here. And, you know, very indignant. I've always been outspoken, and I'm just like, that's not fair. And my mother gave me one of my favorite lessons, which is, fair does not mean that everyone gets the same thing. Fair means that everyone gets what they need. And that's been something that has inspired me and directed me and given me so much guidance throughout my life, but especially in my career. It really inspired me to go into education because it like was mind blowing for me. And of course, it connected with other things that I understood or was picking up on before then. Things that came afterwards. But yeah, my mother gave me the best version of that lesson.
So let's break it down a little, because mm-hmm. what motivated you to be a good student, or what was, you know, the driver, given that you were living in a high poverty neighborhood, perhaps just by history, those are typically the ones that don't get a lot of funding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did you have any champions that encouraged you, or were you just like, I just want to do good in school? What was the motivator for you?
I did. There's a variety. So one of the things that was the reason why I was a good student is it was natural to me. You know, I'm a natural learner. I can study well, and it served me in that capacity. So I was always a good student. But also my mama didn't play that. So she was raising us to value education and see education as a gateway out of our circumstances and conditions and situation. And she wanted to give us the best that she could with that. And in that, my mother was also a learner and open to new opportunities. And so she learned about an organization called Horizons for Youth. And Horizons for Youth became one of my family's biggest champions and was really influential in our education, in that they provided scholarships for us. And so where I started off in public school, we were able to go to a private school. And moving from there, they also, you know, partnered us with one-on-one mentors, and those people provided a different level of education and became champions. So when I wanted to be discouraged or I wanted to do what everybody else was doing and running the streets, there was somebody else in my ear that was exposing me to something else and was able to tell me the outcomes that what I was doing and putting my energy and using my gifts for good, what it could produce for me. And they also exposed us to communities beyond our own and experience. And so I was able to go to sleepaway camp. And so seeing what was possible, because I really believe one of my favorite things is you can't be what you can't see. And so maybe you can't imagine it in your head and you don't have any examples to be that model to even expose you, and you can't fathom it. So I really appreciated those opportunities. And of course, it creates a little bit of conflict because you recognize there's a discrepancy and you wonder, what did you do wrong and what's wrong with you? And I definitely had those experiences. But in the same regard, it did increase my imagination. It did give me more that I could think about and explore. So,
did you ever question it? Looking at the privileges that other people had, and then like that thought of, did I do something wrong to not get that?
That's one of my natural qualities is questioner. And I'm a radical. So I, you know, I had to learn some hard lessons about privilege, because even before going to like sleepaway camp and being exposed to different races, we transferred schools and I went to a private school where I recognized discrepancies and these people looked like me. So maybe in some regard, I was able to say, okay, these people don't look like me. And so it might be this, you know, culture thing or this ethnicity thing. But when I was at a school where people looked like me, but our experiences was much different, I asked even more questions. So it made me start to question my family and family dynamics, because, you know, they come from two parent households, or their parents may be this age, or these are professions. And we had to do, I'll never forget this. There was a point in middle school where we had to do a family tree. And that was the hardest assignment that I had to do in school ever. And it was because there was so much unknown in my family. And there were questions about occupation. And then there was also a lot of shame that came up around things, because you're looking at things differently. So I did question it a lot. Sometimes it was harmful. But it made me want to do better. So it's like, okay, I'm going to achieve and excel and be an overachiever, which was its own season in my life. So,
and going back to that story of you and your brother, why do you think he was getting C's and you were getting A's?
Because I was a natural student set up for that system, the traditional education system and how it works, and my brother was not. And there were other privileges that I had that my brother didn't. One of my friends brought it to my attention early on in college, and she's just like, Shanita, your story is exceptional. You know, she called it, you know, pretty girl privilege. So teachers were willing to try harder with me or do more for me than maybe they were for, you know, a young Black boy. So I think natural ability was a piece, but then also other social things, right? I was female and he was male, and appearances and perceptions that people had. So I really do think that that influenced us. My brother was a gifted artist and he liked to explore things more kinesthetically, whereas, you know, I love to read. I'm a word girl, and schools really serve those who have language-based brains, and that's their strength, and act like the other intelligences don't exist. And so most teachers or in our traditional practices aren't using and leveraging knowledge about other multiple intelligences to, you know, teach the same skills. It's just like, this is the way. So if you're a word person and you can listen to a lecture and you can regurgitate and do that whole process, it serves you well. And if you learn differently or your brain operates differently, then it doesn't serve you. And so my brother worked hard for those C's, which is why my mother was celebrating him.
For sure. And I'm glad she noticed.
Yeah, she did. She was good like that.
So what was the moment when you said, I need to go into education? What was the catalyst to say, I have to plant my seed in this system that doesn't work for everyone?
Pam, I really wish that there was more like romance to what made me go into education, but I grew up poor. It was straight survival. My interest and how I ended up there was, again, how can I do this for the least amount of money? My mother really anchored us into, you need to be able to be stable and secure. So, you know, while I might want to study writing or something like that, she's like, well, how are you going to make money doing that? You know, and so.
So is this safe career?
It was safe, but more so there were two factors. I went into special education in particular. And so it was going to serve me on the front end and the back end. On the front end, because Illinois special education was a shortage area then, it's still a shortage area now. And so they had an Illinois special education tuition waiver. And so if I went and studied special education, I would be able to go for free. And my mother definitely talked to us about student loans and how she couldn't afford it. And so it had to be something for us. And so again, with that thinking, it was like, okay, special education is the way, but then I knew it would also be a guaranteed job. So that's how I ended up in it. But I would just say that that was just divine path, because it was perfect for me. So where people go to college and they change their majors and do that whole thing, I did not. I got into it. What I loved about the school that I was in, it was very practical based. And so even before you can start taking your courses, you have to put in 100 hours of working with students with exceptional needs and doing community service and those sorts of things. And so I began to see people as individuals, and I began to see myself in other people, and I began to see my brother, and I began to make connections about how I was able to be in certain positions and others weren't. And that really inspired me and fueled this fire in me for diversity, which, again, I think all of those are divine. So my belief is that who we are helps establish our purpose. So I don't think that there was a flaw in me growing up young, Black, poor, you know, woman in Chicago in situations where I had to overcome those obstacles. I think that all became part of my toolkit to serve my purpose of influencing education and repairing the damage that's been done to my community through this particular means. And so it's really worked out for me.
That's awesome. So you leave her school, you go elsewhere. So you leave Chicago and you get into special ed because there's a program and you're like, you know, I guess I'm not going to have to pay for school. Is there a moment when you start working with special ed students that is really hard that you're like, oh my gosh, am I going to be able to do this?
Yes. Specifically with younger children. So early on, one of my first practicum experiences was first grade students. And I thought I might be in over my head. These were students that were working on basic speaking, you know, like weren't auditory. There were some significant gaps for them. I didn't feel equipped emotionally. I think I've always kind of had this compassionate heart, and I just didn't feel like I could hold myself together enough to be of service to those children. And so I had that moment, and I went back and I was talking to my supervisor at the time. So she was from the university and she was supervising me in this placement. And I shared this with her, and she said, nope, that just means that it's perfect for you. So she talked about how compassion was necessary for me to do the work that needed to be done. And so I just stuck with it. I toughed it out, and it was great. And I never looked back. My niche, though, so again, one of the things that I love about SIU Carbondale was that we had to do, because when you are certified as a special education teacher, you're certified kindergarten through age 21. So there's a whole gamut. Because what I love about special ed, and this is one of my favorite things, so when people ask, like, what do you teach? They're looking for you to say, I teach reading, I teach math. But really, in special education, you teach individuals. And so I think it's a beautiful model. But in that, we have to have experiences with younger students, early elementary, you know, later in elementary, high school, middle, all of those. So my niche became the older students. And so that evolved and really supported me. So middle school through high school really became my space.
And what do you think about the stigma that's still, you know, for context, I used to be an interpreter at a school district when I was in college. So I went to college in the Midwest. I went to Missouri. So I understand your winters. I'm back in California. I ran away as fast as I could because my tropical body could not take those winters. But when I was in college, I am bilingual. And I went to college in this like 75,000 people town, which, as you could imagine, there weren't a lot of bilingual people that could support the community because there were a lot of migrant workers and lots of English speakers, right? So there wasn't many of in-betweens. And my little young 20-year-old self was hired to be an interpreter at the school district. And many times I wanted so bad to advocate, you know, but as an interpreter, all I can do is interpret. And many times I sat at IEP meetings where, in this case, migrant parents, they had no idea. You know, they just thought they were at a parent-teacher meeting. And so many times when I would sit at these meetings, and I don't know if this is because of the type of parents that the teachers never took the time to explain what we were doing.
You know what? I think, yes. So there's a couple, so there are lots of elements to this.
There's layers there, right?
Yeah, yep, exactly. Lots of layers there. So on the positive side, I think that sometimes you can get so entrenched in the profession that you make a lot of assumptions about what people know, or you just get in your flow and it becomes about you and that sort of thing. And you may not think about the purpose and who you're here to serve and how you're here to serve. And so I think that that's one of the things that can happen when people start practicing. But as far as the stigma, especially with serving my family, because that was something I was always mindful of. Let me start with, I believe that individual education plans or programs, these are IEPs. I believe that they're beneficial for all students. One of the things that I would love to see is special education for all. I think everybody learns differently and everybody deserves some form of customization if they're going to access their highest potential. And that's generally how I deliver it to the families that I serve. So I did have to leave the system because there was a misalignment in the expectations for me and the red tape. And like you said, you want to be an advocate. You're sitting at that table, but you're there to do a specific role and they want to see you do it a specific way. But in that, I always talk to my parents and I start with what they want for their child. And we talk about how to get the best for their child and how to maximize the resources that are available for their children. I think that sometimes the misunderstanding that I come across when I'm dealing with stigma and families in particular is they feel that they don't have a choice and they feel that this is a label that's going to hurt their child, or like they'll have to put it on a job application or do these different things and put them in these positions where they think it's putting them at a disadvantage. And so I do think there has to be a lot of education. And that's one of the things that I do currently is just a lot of parent education, student education, empowerment about disabilities, but more so about the educational system and the opportunities and just how we need to leverage those resources until conditions change within the system.
For sure. I have ADHD, but I didn't realize this until I was in college. And so my whole elementary, middle school, high school career. Is that a career? I don't know. But my whole experience, I wouldn't say school was hard for me because it wasn't hard for me. It was just boring. And I couldn't sit still to pay attention, or I actually could, because girls, ADHD is different than boys, different. Right? Like I wasn't like hyperactive and physically, but my brain was just not paying attention. Like I was that C student. I was a B, C student. I was never an A student because for me, this is how I thought. It was kind of ridiculous to aim for an A because I was like, what do I get from an A? You know, I'm just going to pass so I can go to the next grade. Mm-hmm. But nobody ever took the time to explain anything. Mm-hmm. You know, it was not like, let's sit down and tell you why this is important. And I think also the grading system is also like broken. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many discrepancies. All the education system is built for neurotypical brains. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot. It's very layered. So to bring it back to the IEPs and the families in the Latinx community that I'm a part of, for example, there's still a lot of stigma about mental health and these things. I always bring this up where I was talking to my cousin. They have a business. And so she was talking about one of her employees and it broke my heart so much because I was like, why don't you send him to therapy? You know? And she's like, well, he's not crazy. And I'm like, this is not like, we need to teach you more. You need to understand what therapy is, because he was having some learning issues. There's a lot of layers for like so much. So where could people start for a family perhaps that may not know, may have just received an IEP? What would you say to them? And they may be feeling like, oh, my kid's brain is broken.
I would say, well, okay, I'm going to do twofold because then you said the brain is broken and now it's clicking in my head. So twofold. When it comes to the documentation and then when it comes to your role as a team, I would tell parents that your voice is just as valuable and holds just as much weight as every other member on the team. They don't make any decisions for you or for your child. You get to make decisions. You get to influence what is there in the paperwork. So if it doesn't look right, you don't agree with it, if you come 2 weeks, 2 months later, you can always change it. You have the power. You have the control. It is your right legally. The other element I would say is make sure that the goals match your goals for your child. So think of this as there's nothing wrong with your child's brain. It's not broken. This is about making sure that the tools, the approaches, the way that they're being educated, how they're able to demonstrate aligns with who they are and who you're expecting them to become. And so you want to make sure that the goals in those IEPs match with the outcomes that you want for your child. I'll give an example. I have a student. He is a freshman in high school at this point, and he is still having some challenges with math or numerical operations having to do with time and money. Now, we know that if we're going to be independent in the world, if we're going to have the success, you know, no matter what career path or work that we decide to do, we must fully understand time and money. It's just to impact our quality of life. I go to his IEP meeting where they bring up the fact, because it was time for him to have an evaluation. So they bring up the fact that he's still having these challenges with time and money. And in my mind, it's like, okay, great. We're going to have goals around him learning to master time and money.
Yeah.
They put a goal in there about polynomials, solving polynomials. No, I was like, if everybody at this table can tell me what a polynomial is, then I would say this is a reasonable goal. But if you cannot, we need to change this. And so I think that it's important that you set goals that are going to match the outcomes you want for your child, because our education system, it can be very arbitrary. To your point, Pam, sometimes it's boring. A lot of that information we get, it doesn't add value to our life. It's just kind of moving us through the system to pass the next grade. And it's a lot of information that could be useful to someone, right? Polynomials are great for the next mathematician,
mm-hmm.
but it's not necessary for this child who's really a performer, right? He doesn't need polynomials to be successful. He will need to understand time and money to be successful in his next path. And so I would just say it's not about the brain being broken. It's about who your child is designed to be. It's not about a dysfunction. It's about how they're expected to function in the world and the purpose that they're here to serve, and making sure that the education they receive matches up with that.
I love that. I
hope that helps.
Totally. And I think that's part of the stigma, right? That we are so conditioned to believe that neurotypical brains are the ones that are, like, quote, normal, quote. And for the families and parents that may not have had conversations or may not know about neurodiverse brains, you know, just because your child is identified as different in the school sense doesn't mean that they're not going to function in the world. Because I remember seeing a lot of frustrated parents, you know, because they were like, oh my gosh, my child is now in special ed and they're never going to be able to function in the world. And of course, as an interpreter, I'm like, do you want me to say that to someone?
I think that there's too much weight that we put on the labels that happen in school. And how I describe it to parents, I'm like, this label is not your child's name. This is the diagnosis that helps professionals communicate and get some idea. It doesn't even fully describe. ADHD is a real big old umbrella, and it captures so many different things, and it'll look different on 10 kids, you got 10 kids, it looks different on all 10 of them. But I talk to them about it, about medical conditions. When a person is diagnosed with diabetes, we don't say, oh my God, you know, this is good. They are less than, or these sorts of things. We figure out what's the treatment plan and we move forward so that they can be the healthiest. And again, operate at their highest potential or capacity. And so I usually kind of, you know, it depends. I've picked up a lot of ways to get my families to buy in, to understand, and to really see their child as an individual. Because even when using terms like neurotypical and neurodiverse, again, my perspective is we are all diverse.
Mm-hmm.
In college, I had a few friends and we were kind of competitive when it came to grades, but all of us had different strengths. There was no typicality to us. Like, yeah, we were able to kind of get through the system, but in general, everybody's going to learn and operate different. We're in different bodies. And again, we have different purposes to serve. And so we'll have a different capacity and skill set. My brother has talent that I don't have. He can do some things with his body and he can do some things visually and spatially that I just can't even began to. So I don't, you know, and I stop seeing myself as less than, because the truth of the matter is, prior to school and excelling and that being a space that was valued, we were at home. And so at home, those things didn't really cross over. So if I'm good at reading or writing, it's like I can play school and I can be a teacher. But essentially, when we're out running, jumping, crafting, going about being a child, those things didn't transfer. So I was the one that was behind. And so we also have to understand that we have to stop comparing and just let people be who they are. Because if we're constantly comparing, then we're always going to be behind or ahead. But that's a disservice to our individuality.
I agree 100%. What was the diagnosis in your students that was the hardest one to deal with parents?
Parents don't like hearing learning disability. Mm. So I think over time, the commonality that has come up with ADHD and even autism makes it a softer landing because there's more exposure. And so there's more frequency. So definitely there's still resistance and the fears and all of the things that come up, but there's a lot of resistance to someone being labeled with a specific learning disability. And so that's when I really have to get into the law, the label, the entitlement, you know, and help people understand, like, well, you've heard of dyslexia, right? And then they're like, yeah. And so it's like, yeah, dyslexia isn't a label that your child can receive special education services under. And that translates to this here, and really just getting them to understand that it's a language game in the system and how we come up with services. But that's always hard, because when people hear that, they think that there's a intellectual deficit for their child. They don't understand. And this is what I would share is when a child gets a specific learning disability label, what it means is their intelligence is average to above average, right? It's the intelligence and their intellectual functioning is where it's supposed to be, but they're not performing in reading, math, or writing, you know, and that includes spelling, et cetera, et cetera. But what it's saying is you're intelligent, but your performance at school on these school-based tasks is not where it's supposed to be. And so those are some of the things that I think are really jarring when families hear it and they take it a little bit hard, that really don't end up being as bad as once you get them to help them to understand.
Right. I think this is like shock moment, and then people get into it. Okay, let's take a quick coffee break. Shania, do you drink coffee?
I do drink coffee, but not at home. I don't have a coffee maker, so it's one of those treats that I'll give myself or payday or that type of thing when I'm out or if I go to breakfast. But I'm a tea drinker, so I have a tea kettle at home.
Okay. What kind of teas do you drink? What's your favorite?
So my favorite, there's a brand called Yogi, and I like Yogi teas. I like the flavors, all of them. But I like them because they have these tags with these little sayings on them. So like, you're feeling fast today. Your strength is shared when you are present for others. So little things like that. Like I said, I'm a word person.
Yes.
So I'm totally into that. But they have a tangerine flavor one. So I think that's probably my favorite one. It's called Positive Energy. It's the name of it, but it's delicious. And I like it. That's not what I'm having today. This is more like an autumn flavor tea that I'm drinking today. So, but I have probably 8 or 9 flavors in my cabinet, and I just, how I feel today, and just go to that one.
I love that. So I'm a coffee drinker, obviously, but I also drink tea. I used to drink tea before I drank coffee, and I used to be an avid tea drinker, like a little extra, where I would only drink loose leaf tea, and I had like a
really oh
yeah I was that annoying.
Serious about it.
Yeah, I was very annoying. And then I went to college and I realized that tea wasn't cutting it. It wasn't giving, like, I needed more energy. And so somebody was like, well, drink some coffee. And I was like, oh, what is this thing? And here we are. A tea that I am currently, like, I'm enjoying a lot. Tadin, our friends from Tadin sent me some teas. And Tadin Teas is like it's a company. They're based in the West Coast, and they've been around for a long time. And they sent me apple cinnamon tea. Oh my gosh. It's like when you talked about like autumn type tea, that one's like, oh, so good.
Tell me, what's the brand again? Spell it for me.
Tadin, Tadin.
Got it. I'll check it out. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. This coffee break was more of a tea break, but let's get back to the show. Hola, Vanis. By the way, if you are enjoying this conversation and you want to keep talking about it, if you have some comments and maybe some questions that you have, follow me on social media and let's keep that conversation going. This is your reminder to screenshot and tag me at Café con Pan Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. And let's keep talking about it. Tell me what's resonating. Tell me what isn't. Tell me what do you wish I asked the guest. This is your chance. And if you're on TikTok, I'm at Café con Pan Pod as well. Let's stay connected. Okay, Shanita. So you're in the world of special education. You move back to Chicago. And what do you do now? Tell me more.
Oh, so I am still in the world of special education. And so in that, I'm no longer in the schools. I do my advocacy from a community-based organization, Horizons for Youth, which I mentioned earlier. So
you went back there.
They needed a special ed teacher. So it was they got a grant. They were building out this diverse learners program because the need for those types of services are prominent in the communities that we serve. And so yeah, dream job. Okay, landed
full
my dream
circle.
Job at a place that was home, full circle. So I still work in a world of special ed just from the empowerment and education lens, the advocacy lens. So I use everything that I've learned, mastered, understand about how schools function to do that advocacy with parents. So in partnership with them and really make sure that students get the support services that they need. In that, there was a place that I recognized there was a gap in services. So we can provide tutoring services for all of the academic areas. And there are some, you know, different things that are typical. But what I've found in my experiences working with young people is the gap that is not filled in a lot of places is that self-awareness, that self-determination, that drive, that personal motivation, that self-acceptance, everything that's circle or around that. And so in addition to my work with Horizons for Youth, I founded Lightbearers Institute to do spiritual and personal development work and to fill that gap for youth and young adults. And again, in partnership with their families. So my exciting project is Sunday School, which is really this safe space for the youth and young adults to come to kind of do that self-inventory, do that self-study, get loving lessons. So via stories, wisdom, tools, tips that they can utilize to build up their self, their self-esteem, their self-awareness, and how that can help them achieve their goals through some self-determination. And so that I am really passionate about. So as much as I care about closing the academic achievement gaps and making sure that our students are learning, I more so want to make sure that they're aware of their own gifts and are able to utilize and be confident in using their gifts and standing in their selves in the world. And that's a shortage area of resources, especially when families are resistant to things like therapy or counseling. This is something that people recognize. So it's not religious where, you know, there's these rituals or that type of thing and there's no teachings around that, but really lessons just that they can use, something that you may get from mental health education, but in a setting that people are familiar with.
I love that. And this is only in Chicago?
No, it's virtual. This is a virtual space that I'm curating for youth. So specifically, it's about an age group. The youth are 12 to 21 and on Sunday mornings. And so, you know, there's availability. And if you are able to come in, there's not this, you have to be here every week type of structure. But it's a safe space for them to explore, get some questions, to get some lessons in that personal development that they wouldn't otherwise get in other spaces.
I love that. I mean, I think personal development needs to happen in schools.
Agreed. So until we get there, that's my site, right? That's my my radical space, I do think that it needs to be universal. I think it needs to be something that's publicly funded. I believe in education as a means of reparations and really the repair to the harm. And that's something that I'm really passionate about. This is the change that I think needs to happen, but I have to start with where I'm at because that's the seed that was planted in me.
That's fun. So tell us all the places and spaces where we can find you.
Okay, perfect. So you can find me at teachershanita.com. So that's where you can find out. That's where you can enroll a student in Sunday school under the services there. There are a couple other programs that are available. There are some tools just that I did a series, ABCs for Mental Health, that's valuable. And so there's a resource there. And again, Shanita is C-H-A-N-I-T-A. But I am also Teacher Shanita on TikTok. When I'm inspired and something comes up that I think is going to match in special education and making sure that families are learning about those things, but also mental health education, I'm putting it there. And then I'm also on Instagram. That's where I put a combination of everything. And that is Shanita Solray. So thank you for asking that, Pam.
Yeah, of course. This is awesome. Are there any resources for adults that, as we are talking, maybe they're listening, they're like, oh, maybe I have a different intelligence. Where do you recommend people go to figure out? How many? There's 10 types of intelligences?
Eight,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let me say this.
Depends on the school of
Gardner. Yep, I would do some investigation. So Gardner is the educator who brought up initially, or the psychologist that initially brought to our attention multiple intelligences, and he talked about 8 of them. But I would say that there are some combinations, so absolutely 10, 12, more than that. But I would say there are places, you know what, that you just inspired me. I'm going to put that resource there. So I will still put it on Teacher Shanita, where people can do some exploration. I'll find a couple good ones that I use. And people can do some exploration. But I think you can also just Google, you know, Google our search machine is helpful. There are multiple intelligences quizzes that you can take out there that'll give you some perspective. And I just want everybody to understand that there's going to be some combination. You may be prevalent in 2 of them and not just 1. So don't limit yourself. And it may evolve over time. And so it's always one of those things that I would explore. I want to say that the ABCs for mental health are not just good for young people. My passion is young people, and that's why I do it. But it's there to serve anyone who wants to pick up some strategies where they can be more centered, find more peace, and feel more inspiration for themselves and their lives.
For sure. To me, when I learned about the intelligences, it changed. And I was an adult. I was working with a client, and she works a lot with the intelligences. And I was like, why did nobody tell me this? You know, this, like, my whole school life up until college. And even then, because I found out that I had ADHD doesn't mean that all of a sudden my life changed. I was like, I couldn't understand how people would do what they did. You know, like, I couldn't understand how people would sit there for 3 hours and read and study. That was just not something that my brain could understand. And then she told me about the intelligences, and I was like, what? So I found them, and we're going to go through them real quick. And of course, listeners can go do your own research. Maybe Shanita will have some resources that you can send us. Naturalistic, interpersonal, bodily kinesthetic, musical rhythmic, visual spatial, verbal linguistic, and logical mathematical.
Exactly. Yes. And some, like I said, you'll find a combination. You can be interpersonal and also logical, mathematical. You can be logical, mathematical, and also musical. Those tend to go together. So it's really interesting seeing the combinations that come up when you're working with young people and adults as well.
Totally. And how much would, all the selves that you talked about, the inner happiness, like the self-love, the self-care.
Self-awareness, self-determination, yes.
Totally. How much would those change if young people would understand that, for me, I'm bodily kinesthetic and, interpersonal. And so if I understood when I was young that there was a reason why I couldn't sit there for hours and listen to someone talk to me. Like I could see their body language and, you know, I could see when they were mad at me. But it just, my mind just would not be able to focus because it was a different type of way for me to learn. It would have changed my mind. Like my self-esteem would have been so different.
Yes. And what I find is it increases self-esteem, but it also increases compassion. So relationships change because we're not teasing or we don't feel inferior where we have to compensate. And then the other piece that I always used to love in my classroom is the self-advocacy changes.
Yes.
Because again, if I go to the positive side, it's not that educators, especially those who go in it for the children, not that they don't want to serve all of the children in their classroom. It just may not be the way their brain works and not be the way that they go to. And so if I'm a body kinesthetic learner or interpersonal, I might be able to go to my teacher and say, you know what? I didn't quite understand it that way. Can you explain it a different way? Maybe with this, or can you do it in this manner? And that was one of the things that I coached my children to do or my students to do in my classroom, because it's like, you can only get something out of this. We both have to be active in it. So you got to ask some questions and you got to ask for what you need in order to do your best. And how much more fulfilled would we be in the world if that was the structure? So, yeah, I'm hoping to see some transitions, not just for students with IEPs, but for all students who need to see themselves in spaces that they may not currently.
100%. You know what I do now? Because I'm a rebel and I'm a disruptor. When I'm in meetings, like I recently was in a meeting with a client and they have a process that it's really cumbersome and frankly a little obnoxious of data entry. And talking to the person, I was like, look, my learning disability doesn't allow me to sit here and crunch data for like 15 hours. And so I'm just going to take my time, just so you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he didn't know how to respond. Like, literally, he just kind of, like, looked at me and was like, okay.
I love that, Pam. We need to. I'm quick to tell people I'm visual. Do you have something? Can I see this somewhere? I'm visual.
Totally.
You can talk to me all day. It's going to go just like that, you know. Mm-hmm. But I need that. So, yeah, we need to know how our brains operate so that we can serve ourselves in the world.
Yeah. And I think I found a lot of, I'm also visual. And when I teach, for example, this is something that I hear. I'm an instructor, so I teach a lot. And because I'm visual, I teach a lot with visuals. And every time I teach a workshop, you know, for a new audience that has never heard from me, every time they come back and they're like, thank you for having visuals that help me understand. Every time. And I always, because I'm bodily kinesthetic, you know, I don't want to be a talking head ever. And so I'm always like, all right, I'm going to need you to talk to me. I'm going to need you to raise your hand. I'm mm-hmm. going to need to hear from you, because otherwise I'm going to start talking really fast because my brain is just going to like, brrr, and you're not going to understand. I'm not going to teach you well. So we just need to work on this together. And then the linear people are like, what? But we make it work.
Yeah, good practices. Keep it going. Maybe people will be influenced. You know, that's the culture at Horizons for Youth has definitely shifted with me being there and just bringing that up. It's just like, yeah, no, everybody's a diverse learner. And we just need, that's what it means to be inclusive.
Yes.
You know, I think that there's some perception that it means, you know, very limited ways that we include people, but there are so many forms of diversity. And so we're not fully inclusive if we're not also thinking about the neurodiversity. So
yeah.
I really enjoyed this, Pam.
Thank you. It was fun. Do you have time for some rapid fires?
I do.
What's the biggest success you're still celebrating?
I would say doing Spanish every day. I celebrate it every day because I want to be fluent. And so that's my biggest success that I'm celebrating still.
Because awesome.
Every day I'm on it.
What's a lesson you're still learning?
Lesson I'm still learning is trust.
That's a good one. What is something you've been putting off for months?
Updating my website.
Joy or peace?
Peace.
Discipline or habits?
Discipline.
They didn't think I could blank, but I did.
They didn't think I could land a TEDx talk in 20 applications, and I did.
I love that. Okay, last three questions. Do you have a remedy you want to share with us?
Yes, I do. This is verbal. So again, you know, so many disconnects in family. It wasn't like there was a lot passed down, but some of the things that were passed down were sayings. And so the remedy that I go to frequently is don't buy tomorrow's problems today.
Ooh, love that. And is that your quote and mantra too?
Yes, that's my remedy, the quote, the tip, don't buy tomorrow's problems today will get you far.
I love that. And do you have a productivity tip, trick, or tool that you want to share?
Yes, breathe. Do conscious breathing. That is how you stay present. That's how you can control your emotions. That's how you'll find peace, joy, whichever one you're choosing. Intentional breaths. Counting. I like the relaxing breath. I do is breathe in for four, hold for four, breathe out for four. I do that a couple of times. I'm like, wherever I need to be, wherever I was, I'm not there anymore. I'm back here with me. So I really think that's a great productivity tip.
I support that. Well, Shanita, thank you so much for coming to Café con Pam. This was awesome. I love your work.
Thank you so much for having me. I love the conversation. Stay shiny.
Okay, listeners, what do you think? Are you now looking for the intelligences? What I might do, I can't promise this, is find a really solid image with the eight intelligences, because I know we talked about this at the end and probably made you curious. I'm going to see if I can find a quiz where we can uncover your type of intelligence, and then perhaps give you some clarity. Maybe you're one of those like me, where you're like, you know, the traditional education model does not work for me. And that doesn't make you a bad person, a bad student, a less intelligent one. It just simply makes you different. And maybe you're a parent with children that may be wondering if your kid is perhaps musical, or maybe linguistic, or spatial. We're going to leave all the things that you may be useful and helpful for you. Of course, all the places where you can find Shanita if you're interested in her Sunday school, which sounded awesome to me. And thank you for being here, listeners. If this is your first time, thank you for coming. I hope you stay. Don't forget to hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast platform of choice. And there's also the option to download the Latina Podcasters Network app if you would like to explore more podcasts. Listeners, this is also another time for me to ask you for a review. Ratings and reviews are a way for you to support the show. Really simple, fairly easy to do, whichever podcasting platform you use, you can simply just click, push the stars, leave us some stars. If you have a little bit more time, you can drop us some words of your experience, some questions to support that. What do you love about the show, or what did you love about the show that you listened to? What were you expecting before you listened? What happened after? I hope you're all the way here to where you listened to the full episode. And what would you say to your best friend if you were to recommend the show to someone? We thank you so much for leaving and dropping those stars. I would love to stay connected. Social media, of course, is a great way to do so, at Café con Pam Podcast on the socials, at Café con Pam Pod on the TikTok, which I don't post that much, but we'll get there one day. And you can also check out our website, where you can find a lot of resources, podcast notes, episode notes, pour over articles, discover new people. Events are also, we're dropping those there. And the very coming soon birthday celebration, we just turned 7. And we are working on a really cool project that, because of the holidays, it's been like pushed a little, but we're working on it and can't wait to have you tune in. And this is on the YouTube, so make sure you subscribe on our YouTube channel. Brand new, we don't have a lot of videos, but hey, we're working on it. Just search for Café con Pam on the YouTube and subscribe. Listeners, thank you so, so, so much for being here, continuing to be here. Oh, we turned 7. It's a milestone age for sure. So I'm really grateful. Thank you for being here. Y como siempre, stay shining.